the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
This is the podcast for broadcast. Sound off podcast. With Matt Kendall.
This week, a trip to the sales side. When I first started in radio, I never really thought about the sales side. My job was to play the commercials, read the tags, fill out the log properly, read my daily production load, bulk the carts before my overnight shift, and then pull the commercials for the morning show and stack the carts in an organized manner where they would not tip over. If you recognize any of this, you were probably in radio before 1997, when there were still carts and overnight staff. Programming and sales have always worked together in some capacity, but way back when it might have involved collaborating with concert tickets and trips or playing golf together, and in the later years it became more about sales promotions and then ratings promotions, and today PDs are making sales calls and salespeople are writing ad copy, for better or worse. Scott Howard started in the programming side and migrated to sales. Jokingly, Scott said that his foray into radio was initially...
It was a terrible mistake that I've never been able to fix.
Scott will be the first to admit that the migration to sales was out of necessity, and he opens up about his mistakes and fears. I started reading his blogs after connecting to them through RadioSalesCafe.com, a news group I frequent every other day. I think of the members in there as my friends in the sales department. Scott has a blog and also a podcast which deals with sales issues and client concerns. In this podcast, you'll hear Scott reference his time in Detroit at WMUZ. Scott is the owner of Skloho Marketing Solutions and is a marketing advisor at News Talk 1190 AM and 107.5 FM WOWO in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He joins me from his office there now.
Hi, this is Scott.
Scott Howard, how did you get into radio?
I grew up listening to radio stations in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where I grew up, and there was a nighttime disc jockey that I enjoyed listening to, who later, as an adult, became friends with. But by the luck of the draw, my high school started a radio station when I was between my sophomore and junior years of high school, and here in the United States, we had to be licensed to operate a radio station back then, and so that summer, myself and a bunch of other classmates, we took the test. About half of us passed it, and then from then on, I ended up pursuing a career in radio.
And have you always been on the sales side, or were you on the air?
No, that was when I was 16, and so for the first 10 years exclusively, I was working on the air, either directly as one of the air personalities or programming or both. My thought of most salespeople was I really don't like most of them. I don't like what they do, and I never want to do that.
So why did you wind up doing sales?
When I was 25 going on 26, the radio station that I was working for underwent a ownership change. Being in management, there was myself, the sales manager. I was the program director, the sales manager, and the general manager. We all were given the heave-ho as the new company came in. So I was out looking for a new place to earn a living to support my growing family. And over the next couple of months or so, I had three different job offers. And the one that intrigued me the most was also in the area that I liked the least. And that was in the advertising world. But it was because of a radio station in Detroit and their approach to advertising that it sounded much different than anything I'd been exposed to previously. Usually, salespeople just hand a script to an announcer and say, read this, and the script's half good or half bad, depending upon your perspective, and there's usually too much stuff in there, and try and cram it into 30 seconds or 60 seconds, and that was my previous experience of doing that type of stuff. But when I went to Detroit, the position I took there was actually working doing a lot of discovery with clients, going out and meetings with them instead of being stuck in the studio, developing ad campaigns for them. And I found that all very intriguing.
You're born with radio in the blood. You've got a lot of passion for it. And it's led you into being really a great salesperson and being very connected with what you do. How did you get over the hump of being, you know, of learning to make a sale? Because I think a lot of people in radio are passionate about it, but we just don't make great salespeople. So how do we get over that hump?
Well, I backed into sales slowly but surely. And actually, I don't think I was very successful at the first position I did with that salesperson title up in Detroit. What happened was I was ended up heading up a production department and training other people who were doing the same type of work that I was. And finally, I was also training salespeople. Not being having the responsibility as a salesperson, what I ended up doing was helping them to ask the right questions so we could get the right answers, so we could put together advertising campaigns and put together effective commercials and stuff like that. And one day, I told our general manager, I said, if Kenny doesn't make it as a salesperson, then I'm ready to take over that job. And I did for a couple of years, but I found that I had the same struggles that nearly anybody else did, and that was being afraid to go out there and talk to people that I didn't know. So I had to overcome that eventually. My struggles in Detroit, while I was able to work with a bunch of people that I knew, eventually, that fear that salespeople sometimes get when they're afraid of rejection probably got the best of me for a while there.
What are some of the mistakes that are just glaringly obvious that a new salesperson is going to make in the first couple weeks that you can look across the room and say, yeah, that's not going to work out?
Somebody who's really too salesy, one of the first things that I notice is if they're talking too much. This applies to any type of sales. If they've got some type of canned pitch or something that they're trying to sell to somebody without listening, they say that it's very important to be doing more listening than talking, because that's where you start finding out what it is. Eventually, we returned to radio sales in Indiana. The one thing that I wanted to do was take the best things of what I learned when I was in Detroit and apply them brand new, working for a group of radio stations that were struggling. And it was basically going out and making friends and going with the attitude of, I'm here to help you figure out how to be more successful. And I know a bunch of things about marketing or advertising, but whether you know it or not, you really, you just have the curiosity and find out what it is they're struggling with and then try something. But if you're trying to just sell them something, it's a very one-sided, and nobody likes to be sold, but people do like to, of course, buy when they see something that they like.
Same sort of question now, but this time it's going to be with ad copy. So what do you know right away is going to be bad ad copy that's just not going to work?
Bad ad copy usually is stuff that sounds fake or pushed. If somebody is trying to do humor and they're doing a lousy job at it, some of the most successful commercials and campaigns that I've seen are ones that create an impression and create a connection. And the work that I do when I talk to people now is I try and get people to mimic human relationship principles. Fortunately, right now I work for a talk radio station, and so we've got the capability of having our morning host and afternoon host do live commercial endorsements. And so we're looking for taking the personality and having them speak on a friend-to-friend basis to their audience. Same thing should be done in recorded versions of commercials. I've recorded some commercials myself where it's simply me talking without any background music, without any of the filler stuff, and just talking as if I would to a friend of mine.
After you make a sale, I think we should always be thinking about like the renewal process, because I think making the sale is the first thing. The next thing is you want them to renew. But if you want them to renew, that project begins right away. So what are your biggest suggestions or tips for getting a client to renew?
One of the things that I do almost all the time is, unless what we're going to be advertising is a short-term event, if it's something that has long-term potential, then we sign them up for a full 12 months and then continue to work with them. And during those 12 months, I'm usually sitting down with them every 4 to 6 weeks or so, talking about what's going on, talking about expectations. Actually, we've talked about expectations before we even hit the air. And those expectations are like, well, during the first 4 weeks or so, the people who will probably, you'll get some feedback from are your friends and family who have heard your ad on the radio. You may get some people actually buying stuff from you, but that first 4 weeks is sort of a down payment on the upcoming months. Instead of trying to cross your fingers at the end of a contract and hope that they renew, we pretty much have a feel as we're going through the whole process as to what's going on. And you don't have to wait until the end of a contract to renew them. If you've got ideas and ways to help them and things are going the way that you anticipated, then you can actually add additional schedules to what they're doing. I try not to actually have a contract expire. Earlier today, I was meeting with some people, and we just signed an annual contract about 4 months ago, and we made some changes, and so we tore that one up and started another 12-month contract.
When a client says the advertising's not working, what's your strategy?
Well, I want to know what they're perceiving as not working. Advertising is very limited with what it can do. Even the most effective advertising, all it can do is be an invitation to invite people to interact with the business. So in the process that I'm going through and I'm talking to them about their advertising campaign initially, I'm asking them questions like, how do you handle your customers? What do you do when somebody contacts you? Do people come to your store or do they call you, or how do you measure that initial contact and how do you keep track of that? Sometimes I've found that the advertising might be working, but the people who are responding to the people that their ads are sending to are doing a lousy job. I had a heating and cooling contractor once where they had the ability to record phone calls, and we went through and listened to about half a dozen phone calls and discovered that people answering the phone needed help being trained on how to get off the phone and make appointments. So I did some training with them and helped them to recognize that they weren't trying to sell stuff over the phone. They were just the people who were supposed to be scheduling appointments. And that really helped change things around so that the question wasn't really, was the advertising working? It was, what are you doing once you're starting to get response?
Same sort of question, but this time now I've got an advertiser who says, you know, I'm really taking things more digital now. What's the strategy when they say we're looking at some Facebook or we're looking at some online advertising?
Well, I've got the situation which is somewhat unique in that our company also has a digital division, but even though we can do some of the things you just mentioned, I had some time where I worked in the digital world, and so I know what standards I want. And so some of the things that our company offers as far as digital stuff with regards to Facebook, I don't necessarily recommend. I may go back to recommending our products that we offer, especially with all of the changes that Facebook and some of these digital options they go through. There's always a bit of challenges in making sure that you're on top of things. There's times when I can say, okay, well, tell me what you're going to do. How are you going to implement that? Sometimes I can help them to implement those things through the work that I do with my company and our radio stations. Other times I may connect them with somebody that I know. My main goal is to look out for their best interests and to find ways that it also will include what I can offer them. But I need to be true, first of all, to being their advocate, and they may take some time and walk away from what we're doing if that's something that they want to do. But I will still stay in touch with them. That way, I'll want to find out what type of results they're having. Oftentimes, the results they're having are not as noticeable as what they were doing when we were doing stuff at the radio station. People usually don't say, well, yeah, I saw your ad. Your pop-up ad or the ad that followed me around when I was browsing the web. Ads on the radio, sometimes, if they're done correctly, will generate people actually telling you.
You sell 30s, you sell 60s. Do you see a time when we're going to be selling like a different length of commercial?
When I started at this radio station about 5 years ago, I started something that my coworkers nicknamed my secret sauce. And our radio station is a news talk radio station, and we've got a newscast, a local newscast, every half hour during our prime time between morning drive through middays and the afternoons. And we did not have a price set for news and weather sponsorships. We were told a general guideline, but it was something that we weren't even keeping track of. Well, I started selling 10 and 15 second live embedded commercials like that, so that's sort of been my secret sauce. And I've used that in a way that it helped me spread the dollars that a advertiser had to get more coverage. When we simply needed to direct people to a location, we didn't need to sell them against their competitors. We simply needed to say, you know, go to such and such place in such and such shopping center. They're open today till 9, and we were able to get more messages out there for the same amount of money that they may have spent using a 30 or 60 second commercial. I was just learning last week that my coworkers have been adopting this, and we now have a set price for this, and those prices for those are getting close to what it costs to run a 30 second commercial.
In just a second, Scott's going to tell us why he started the blog and eventually the podcast, and pass along a few more secrets from the sales pit.
25 catalogs, over 2,000 albums, 61,000 songs, 197,000 tracks. Megatrax has everything you need to create the perfect sounds for your station, podcast, or digital program. Our flagship catalog, Megatrax, has hundreds of albums covering a huge array of genres and styles. Deep East Music and No Sheet Music deliver international sounds straight out of London. Sensacion brings an authentic Latin flair to every album and is recorded live by local musicians. Megatrax also has a huge collection of FFX, sound design, and narration mixes to give you full creative freedom to make any type of production imaginable. Head on over to Megatrax.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's Megatrax.com.
The Sound Off podcast is powered by Core Image Studio, your brand sound. Get it in the now. CoreImageStudio.com.
Why'd you start a blog, and who did you intend to blog for?
When I started blogging, I was doing this over a dozen years ago, and I was encouraging some clients that I had to help their own website visibility by using some of the blog features that they had. Then I also discovered that I wanted to write down some of my own thoughts and experiences. One of my kids actually had started a personal blog. And when I started doing this, it was also because I wasn't trusting my current laptop to survive. And so I wanted to have a more permanent place to store thoughts regarding advertising and marketing and things like that. So I started blog on Google's old Blogspot. Then after a few years, a friend of mine suggested going ahead and buying my own domain and doing those types of things. And over the years, that's evolved into actually writing just one article per week. And last year, when that was going on, my company that I worked for was looking for somebody to do a podcast regarding all this advertising and marketing for radio. And they came to me and asked if I would consider taking the articles that I was writing and doing an audio version of them. But the actual articles, I've been doing them continuously since around 2005 or 6, at least one a week.
So that's how it evolved into the podcast. And what do you think about podcast and its power? And what are your takeaways? Because you're actually doing a podcast. You sell radio ads, but do you see the potential there between, you know, radio and podcast, or just podcast advertising on its own?
Yeah, it's been interesting because before podcasts were getting much traction, one of the things that people were doing in social media was video blogging. And I never wanted to commit to doing something on camera. What I found, though, as podcasts have become more popular, the opportunity for radio stations in particular to get involved with podcasting was a natural. Most of our radio stations in our company have an obligation to do podcasting, We actually have some long-form, like I said, we're a talk radio station, and on the weekends, we've just recently launched some long-form programs that are 30 minutes to an hour long. And part of that is we have recruited some hosts who are paying us hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars per week to produce a program for them that they're hosting or co-hosting, and we're promoting it as not just a weekend radio program, but it's also going to be available as a podcast. So we monitor the number of downloads and hits that we're getting on that, and as podcasting has become more popular nationwide, we're noticing that it's the time for podcasting is really here. And I would highly recommend, if you've got a message, to do an audio version of it in a podcast form.
What's radio's biggest advantage?
It's not true across the board, because there's a lot of radio stations that have cut staff, and so they don't have the ability for listeners to be able to call or connect with the person they're hearing on the radio. But even with some of the national programs that are syndicated and things like that, there's the ability for the listener to think of the person that they're hearing on the radio as a friend. It's a personal connection. It's different from walking on stage at the beginning of a concert, and when they say, when an artist comes and says, "Hello, Toronto," and everybody in the crowd responds because, of course, the artist is in Toronto. Instead, the most successful radio personalities and successful radio programs are make it feel like the person who's listening to them at the other end is actually an individual person. We don't have the technology now to say each person's name who's listening. Who knows, that might come in the future. But in the current realm, at least one of the things is people seem to identify with the air personality on the radio, and this can also occur in podcasts if you're presenting yourself in a familiar sort of setting as that friend. When I've got people who are involved with selling advertising for billboards or newspaper or even television newscasts and stuff, there's the closest probably might be the newscast, but even there, those newscasters aren't usually doing commercial announcements and being able to interact with the audience the way that I've seen it occur in the radio world.
You gather for a sales meeting, you look around the room, and everybody has the same big challenge. What's the one big challenge that is facing salespeople these days?
The biggest challenge probably is finding the ideal client. And part of that, I think, is because salespeople are not asking for enough. Well, actually, they're not asking for a large enough commitment from the advertising partners that they're going after. And maybe they're not even thinking of them as advertising partners. They're just looking at trying to meet their monthly budgets, their annual budgets. But if you take a longer-term approach to it and more of a consultant role, I mean, I work with people who are healthcare professionals. They've got advanced degrees in taking care of certain things that you certainly wouldn't trust me to take care of. They're looking for that type of expertise from the people who are sitting in that sales meeting to be able to help them figure out how to get customers and clients. So if you can go in there as a salesperson and portray the confidence, borrow it if you need to, from the more experienced people in the room and share some success stories and try and help those people to be more successful, then you'll have the courage perhaps to start asking for annual agreements and asking for larger dollar amounts and having people make the larger commitments. The biggest reason people probably cancel their advertising is because they didn't commit enough at the very beginning. They just wanted to put their toe in the water instead of jumping in with their full body.
Scott, thank you so much for being a part of the Sound Off podcast. I love your blog, and I love your podcast, because now I don't have to read your blog. I can just listen to you recite it to me.
Thanks. When I started it, I said, now for those of you who can't read, I said that to a group of friends of mine, You can now just listen to it. So,
well, it's really great that you do this for for those of us who are into programming. We don't always have an opportunity to take the time maybe to sit down with our salespeople, but you know, you're like a sales friend that I can listen to in my podcast series. So it's great that you do these and keep them coming, if you would.
I will, and I have a whole lot of respect for people who are in your shoes, because in the broadcasting world, on the programming side, you're being asked to bend to what a sales team wants you to do, and you guys need to make sure that you work with those people, but you're also protecting the brand that's your radio station. Otherwise, we'd have back-to-back infomercials and nobody would listen. So it's a combination of both the sales and programming sides working hand in hand, and I appreciate the work that those of you who are still involved in the programming side are doing, and I hope that you can have a great relationship with the people who are supporting the station through the advertising side.
Well put, that great relationship between programming and sales, which is always needed for a successful brand.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Sound Off Podcast. Find us online at soundoffpodcast.com and connect with us wherever great social media is housed. The show is imaged using the sounds from Core Image Studios and assembled weekly by
Evan Surminski, Mixing and Production.
Kendra Magnus Johnston, Content Marketing.
Written and hosted by Matt Kundle.
A production of the Sound Off Media Company.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, SayTheDamnScore.com.
It's said that the more time you have to invest, the greater the return. Well, guess what? Kids have the most time if we learn to invest early. That's why I created the Cash Kid Podcast, where I teach kids and some adults financial skills they need to know on how to earn, save, and invest their money. Join me on this journey as we interview experts and explore topics that allow you to grow your money as kids. This podcast will help you become the money expert among your family and friends. Just remember, anyone can be a cash kid. You just have to learn how to become one. Get ready to grow your financial knowledge and your wallet with the Cash Kid Podcast.